News, sports, weather from Dr. Bill Williams, traffic info from Kane, and one of the Gulf Coast's most familiar voices. It's Mobile Mornings with Dan Brennan and Dalton Arwig.
Good morning from Dan and Dalton, FM Talk 106.5. It is 7 minutes after 8 o'clock on Mobile Mornings and day number one of the Democratic National Convention, the Democrat National Convention in Chicago. Ironic that it's in Chicago, and we look for things to be pretty active up there with protests and such. And that was the scene many, many years ago in 1968. At that time, the protests were over the Vietnam War, and things got really... Mayor Daley was in the midst of his reign up there in the city of Chicago, and things got really, really violent with protesters and police. Will we see some of that activity? I know this, the numbers of pro-Palestinian or anti-Israel protesters, agitators, call them what you want, is going to be like 100,000 is what somebody estimated.
Right, yeah, I've seen the number 100,000. This one from News Nation has it at more than 50,000. Well, 100,000 would be accurate. It is more than 50,000, but we'll see. And how violent will it get? What was that one quote that you had this morning from somebody with one of those organizations, like leave the bruises from police batons?
Should be like the fall fashion when you're going back to school.
Yeah.
Something like that. Yeah, I mean, they're asking their protesters to
get beat,
conflict, almost have a combat with the security of the police. So that'll be a badge of honor if you've got bruises on you from from outside the convention doors.
Wow. From that News Nation article, because I'm wondering, you know, how hard will they crack down here if things start getting a little crazy? You have a very liberal mayor, Mayor Johnson, up there. You have a lot of liberals in town for the DNC.
Yeah.
Will the police response be, will they just let things slide, or are they going to crack down and crack down early?
There's going to be a lot of people that were politicians, defund the police politicians, that are going to be begging for police security in the next 4 days.
Yeah, that's a good point. Yeah, a lot of the defund the police congressmen
they'll be
and
there.
Congresswomen.
They'll be there.
Lucas Rothar, FBI's top special agent in Chicago, told journalists at a briefing there were no specific concerns, but warned of an elevated threat environment. Quote, "We do acknowledge the vast threats that we face as a nation, running from violent crime to international terrorism, domestic terrorism, and hate crimes, along with a host of other threats." They mentioned having a... what was the word here? Ring of steel around the Democratic Convention. So they're going to build a wall. They're going to put a wall, a ring of steel fencing around the, I guess, the United Center is where most of this will be going on.
Yep, where the Bulls play.
This has potential to, it's a powder keg. Will it be lit is the question.
It is. So, man, it'll all be, you know, pretty much on live TV, so we'll watch it unfold right in front of us.
Yeah, and the schedule for today, so I know, you know, it's weird that the sitting president at the Democratic National Convention will be the first day speaker.
Yeah.
You know, because they're saving day four for Kamala. It'll start today. Keynote speeches and programming begin at 5:30 Central Time today, evening programming at 6. And every night it's supposed to end around 10 p.m. I don't know who out there in our audience will be watching all day, every day for the next 4 days. But, you have Biden today. You also have former Secretary of State Hillary Clinton expected to be among the speakers today. Tomorrow you will have the Obamas speaking. Former President Barack Obama will have the theme, A Bold Vision for the Future. And First Lady Michelle Obama will address the convention before Barack Obama. Then Wednesday... theme, A Fight for Freedom. Former President Bill Clinton and Nancy Pelosi will also speak. This is a real who's who, isn't it?
It's top of the charts, man.
Also scheduled to speak this week, Second Gentleman Doug Emhoff, Senate Majority Leader Chuck Schumer, and House Minority Leader Hakeem Jeffries. Also today, the Chicago Mayor will speak, and the Illinois Governor J.B. Pritzker set to speak tomorrow.
What are we in for here? What are we in for? Seriously, Dalton. We kind of know, I guess, what we're in for inside the United Center. You know, we kind of know what those talking points are going to be. What are we in for outside of the convention itself and outside the United Center, what exactly is going to go down? How, like you said, the questions would be, what's the police action going to be? And then, you know, I threw in there, what's the coverage going to be like as well?
Mm-hmm.
So it's all about to happen, so we'll find out. I thought this was interesting too, Dalton. As the convention is about to open, Harris is taking some fire from corners of the media you would not normally expect that.
Yeah.
The Washington Post editorial board rejected Vice President Kamala Harris's economic proposals, telling readers over the weekend instead of offering a substantive plan, she squandered the moment on populist gimmicks. I've heard that said a time or two. I did not expect it coming from the Washington Post.
Mm-hmm.
In a scathing piece published Friday, the Post editorial board accused Harris of being less forthright with voters about the reasons why prices remain high despite the cooling rate of inflation by blaming big business. Ms. Harris said she'll target companies that make excessive profits, whatever that means. I'm glad that's the way he put it. Thankfully, this gambit by Ms. Harris has been met with almost instant skepticism, with many critics citing President Richard Nixon's failed price controls from the 1970s. Whether the Harris proposal wins over voters remains to be seen, but if sound economic analysis still matters, it won't. So again, it's a proposal to get attention. Mm-hmm. Help me if I'm wrong here.
Well,
it doesn't really have a lot of sound basis as a policy,
right?
But she's trying to get elected.
And for folks wondering why the Washington Post is hitting back so hard, well, maybe a reason would be that Bezos owns, is it Whole Foods that he owns? I think it's Whole Foods. So he owns a grocery chain.
Yeah.
So he does not want to see price controls.
I didn't know
on
that.
Groceries. And the New York Times, how about, who was it this week who said a coup is a coup? Doesn't matter what the feelings among the Democrats are right now.
Maureen Dow.
That's right.
Who you see a lot on panels and things like that, always speaking from the left. Yeah, a coup is a coup. So you didn't expect to hear that word, out of a paper like the New York Times. And this is a columnist well regarded for her work, obviously as a liberal, even though it was the right thing to do because Joe Biden was not going to be able to campaign, much less serve as president for another 4 years. How about the next 4 months?
Mm.
In a fully vital way, it was a jaw-dropping putsch. I don't even know what that word is. Anyway, the president announced he would be dropping out of the race for the White House at the end of July, following weeks of pressure from top Democrats who had reportedly called on him to bow out in private. Top Democrats, including former House Speaker Nancy Pelosi, if Schumer, you know, all the people in your who's who that's going to be speaking on Tuesday.
Right. I think.
At some point, when the polls cratered, Democratic mandarins decided to put the welfare of the party and the country ahead of the president's ego, but she did call it a coup.
Mm-hmm.
A coup's a coup. So there you go. That so the Democratic, the whole convention opens up on that, on those notes.
So
what is noteworthy
so far policy wise? Kamala led off with no tax on tips. Direct rip from what Trump said 3 or 4 months ago.
Yeah.
Regardless of whether you think that's a good policy or not, Trump rolled it out first, and then she came next, and then you had the. I think Vance or Trump recommended $5,000 tax credits for families who have a child. So each new child, $5,000. She said, we'll do that, but we'll do $6,000. So, I mean, it is a class president election right now. Just tell the people what they want. And then once she rolled out that big economic speech Friday, you had the grocery, you know, big grocery are the ones that are taking us to the cleaners right here. And she also mentioned, you know, home buying and providing first-time home buyers, not a $25,000 loan, the way I understand it, but just $25,000 to get them started on that down payment.
Yeah.
And if everyone's walking around with an extra $25,000 in their pocket, the price of the home is going to go up $25,000. CNN also going after her for this grocery, the grocery policy plan she had. Here's part of that clip from CNN over the weekend, I believe.
Catherine, I read your piece and I heard you just mention it. The federal ban on price gouging for groceries. You are skeptical of this. Why?
Well, first of all, nobody can explain what price gouging means. It's like that old line about pornography. I know it when I see it. In the sense that, what does it mean to have an excessive price or an excessive profit margin? That seems to be shorthand for a price or a profit margin that bugs me, that seems too high. So, it's very hard to pin down what this would actually mean. If you look at the legislation that, as I mentioned, is already in the Senate, led by Senate Warren and Senator Bob Casey and a slew of others, the particular way that this is written, which is likely to be the template for any proposal that Harris would eventually embrace, is especially bad in that it just bans excessive prices, grossly excessive prices, grossly excessive profit margins, and says that the Federal Trade Commission can use any metric it deems appropriate to decide what that would mean. Which basically says, like, it's not going to be markets, it's not going to be supply and demand that's determining how much your grocery store charges you for milk or for eggs. It's going to be some bureaucrat in D.C., which seems like totally unworkable, first of all, for the FTC to be deciding, like, how much Kroger charges for eggs.
This is a CNN economics correspondent.
Yeah.
I'll let her continue.
Right?
Yeah. But it also would be very bad for markets. We've seen this kind of thing tried in lots of other countries before: Venezuela, Argentina, the Soviet Union, etc. It leads to shortages. It leads to black markets, plenty of uncertainty. And beyond that, the specific way this bill is written might actually increase prices because of some of the other language in it, things like requiring companies, public companies, to disclose in their quarterly reports, their quarterly earnings reports, how they're setting prices, which is a great way to help them collude, which normally we don't want them to do. So anyway, the devil's in the details, I guess, for that bill, but it's really hard for me to imagine any form of legislation that preserves the spirit of what she's proposing.
So how about, she rolls out her first major economic, or her first policy on anything.
Which we were waiting on, right? Where are you on whatever?
Yeah, and immediately, Washington Post, CNN, New York Times saying, this isn't going to work.
They all sacked her at the same time. Like, who do we give the tackle to? Because all three hit the quarterback basically at the same time. And the quarterback was Kamala Harris, and that's the first thing that she rolled out, and it got criticized roundly. And of course, the idea of Harris is she equipped for the job? And being silent forever didn't give anybody any confidence. And then when she did pipe up,
she got destroyed by the liberal media.
Got destroyed by the left.
Yeah, and I'm also interested to see her and everyone who's speaking on her behalf this week. What they say about the Israel-Gaza conflict. Mm-hmm. Will she split with Biden on that further than she has already?
We'll talk a little bit about that coming up here. Joseph ran for junior president at St. Paul's, and he said, right now in our lunchroom on Wednesdays or whatever, you see spaghetti and you see meatball sandwiches, but you don't see spaghetti and meatballs together. And he said, under my administration, that'll change. And, he got elected.
That's great. Yeah. What'd the Washington Post have to say?
They killed him.
Yeah, I imagine.
They destroyed him. 820 FM Talk 106.5 Mobile Mornings with Dan and Dalton. Morning from Dan and Dalton, FM Talk 106.5. We're waiting for everything to get... There we go. There we go.
Some technical issues this morning.
You know, every now and then, the computer's going to do what the computer's going to do, and there's no shoving it off the road in time. But I think we got it figured out right there. Anyway, it's 825 FM Talk 106.5. We'll get to the text line here in a little bit. Also, we will talk with our friends from Bryant Bank about the upcoming football season. They sponsor Football Fridays with Feinbaum on Fridays, every Friday in the fall. So Michael Holland, Greg Strawn with Bryant Bank will be our guests here shortly.
Yeah, also later in the hour, we'll unveil the big grand prize for the FM Talk 106.5 College Pick'em Challenge. So stay tuned for that. And looking at the text line real quick, let's go through some of these. Leo says, walls for me, but not for thee. Talking about the Chicago police putting up the big steel ring, they said, around the Democratic National Convention. Jason says even if any protesters are arrested, Kamala and Tim will bail them out. Of course, referencing the Black Lives Matter protest back in 2020. Another texter, I'll be counting the blades of grass in the yard all week rather than watching the Democratic National Convention. Chris in Orange Beach says, we need to widen 59 from Loxley to the beach with all the houses that are being built in Baldwin County. Off the heels of our discussion on 65 being widened, or the campaign to widen 65 as billboards are popping up.
Named after Ainsworth, although Ainsworth was not
privy to that.
Consulted on it at all.
Chris also says the real question to ask is what are we in for if Trump does not win in November? Another texter, needs to be the Communist National Convention. Welcome to the new Communist Party. This texter, could someone tell me why people are protesting against Israel? There is a, and it, I guess, I don't know how long ago it really started, but a faction of the left, you think of the AOCs, Rashida Tlaib, Ilhan Omar, have been, even before the October 7th attack, very anti-Israel, anti-Zionism, and they made that clear in their interviews over the years, and their constituents feel much the same way. And you look at this younger generation, they too, these college kids who are kind of starting to speak out politically, are right in line with that. They feel that this is a mass genocide that Israel is behind, and that they use the October 7th. They think that Israel, that it wasn't an initial attack, that Gaza was just getting Israel back for past offenses, or they think that Israel allowed it to happen so that they could wage ultimate war in Gaza. They're just pro-Palestinian, and they've made that clear on college campuses and in other political protests throughout the country.
They've broken it down to the oppressor and the oppressed.
Colonizers versus the colonized.
There you go. Blinken on a deal, if they can get one together, because right now Hamas has described suggestions of progress on the Israel-Gaza ceasefire deal as an illusion. That is a story from the BBC. Meanwhile, speaking in more general terms, this is Antony Blinken.
We're working to make sure that there is no escalation, that there are no provocations, that there are no actions that in any way could move us away from getting this deal over the line, or, for that matter, escalating the conflict to other places and to greater intensity.
So a senior Hamas official told the BBC earlier there had been no progress and mediators were selling illusions. The Israeli military launched a campaign in Gaza to destroy Hamas in response to an unprecedented attack, of course, on the 7th of October. Now, there are also those of the opinion that Netanyahu has been pretty heavy-handed in all this, and that there's been way more death and destruction than anybody would have ever dreamed at the beginning of the conflict. I mean, that's also out there.
Yeah, that is a fair statement. That's a real allegation that's being made. And is Netanyahu taking advantage of the support that he's getting right now from America to expand this thing and maybe go to war with Iran, which would certainly drag the U.S. As far, even though we're already selling weaponry and I'm sure helping with logistics with the IDF, if there's an Iran war, we will be involved. There's no doubt about it. And you also have, of course, the missiles being lobbed over the northern Israeli border, back and forth, actually. Is Netanyahu using the, I guess, what Republicans and many Democrats have said is we're behind you all the way. Is he taking it too far is the question.
You know, I heard a podcast on all this and read some articles, too, that were in early November. And a Jewish professor at a U.S. college, university, said at that time in November, and when I heard it, when I listened to it, it was like not long ago. He said, and then I understand it, but he's kind of going way overboard here. That was in November. So
very early on.
Yeah, very early on. And much more has happened since then. It's 8:30.
FM Talk 106.5 and Mobile Mornings. It is a Monday, and right now it's time to head over to McConnell Automotive and talk with Louie Arata. Hey, Louie.
Hey, good morning, guys. How are you?
We are doing well. And let me know, how are things going out at McConnell? I know you have a stocked lot of both new and pre-owned vehicles.
That's right. I mean, we've got a great selection of pre-owned and new. And, I mean, just come on by and see us. It looks like it's a beautiful day today. It's got that heat down, so y'all come check those out. If you ain't got time to come out here now, check us out online, McConnellAutomotive.com. We've got some great deals online, and we're going to be here all day. Looks like it's going to be a great day, so come on by and see us.
All right. We appreciate it, Louie.
Thank you. Thank you.
That's Louie Arata. Go see him at McConnell Automotive on Dolphin Street, just east of I-65, and the website, McConnellAutomotive.com.
Get to the text line here in a little bit, talking some football right now with our friends from Brian Bank, Michael Holland, Greg Strong. Good to have you guys in studio for sure, always.
Good morning, Dan.
Hey. Dalton. And feel free to just pass that mic back and forth. But, yeah, a big season on deck. I don't think we have any SEC teams this upcoming week zero. We'll have one Thursday game, I believe, in the SEC next week. So somebody will get started on August 30th. But what a different year in the SEC. Now a 16-team league with Texas and Oklahoma joining. And you've got, of course, Nick Saban gone from Alabama, Kalen DeBoer taking his place, and then the Georgia Bulldogs trying to keep that dynasty rolling along. I think we're in for a heck of a season this year,
16 teams. It's going to be a long time to a long season. It's going to be a exciting season. Everybody's wondering how well prepared Oklahoma thinks they are for the SEC. Thanks, you know, Texas probably more so because of Sarkisian, but it's going to be an interesting season this year.
Yeah, it really is. And for you, I know you're looking forward to seeing how old Hugh Freeze does in year two. You're the Auburn fan. And, I mean, recruiting-wise, he's got it going on. Finished pretty high up in the 2024 recruiting classes, but you look at 25 and the early returns on the class of 26. He said, you know, you need 3 or 4 years of recruiting, and then we'll see where we are. Don't let me go right now, give me a little leeway, but things are exciting on the plains right now.
A big difference from our prior coach as far as recruiting and the emphasis on talent. You know, we all know Coach Saban always said, you know, you're only as good as your recruiting classes, and that's the truth. I remember years ago when I was at Auburn, and Coach Dye, after his first year, you know, reporters asked, well, Coach Dye, how was your first recruiting class? He said, I'll tell you in 4 years. So that's kind of how it's going to be here. But I like what we've seen so far with Hugh Freeze and staff. You know, it's hard to we're talking about this year right now, but you look at the 25 class, like you mentioned, and the 26 class that's coming behind them. It's really going to be exciting. And, you know, I was looking at some of the numbers as far as the projected starting first and second teams for Auburn this year, and there's like 27 transfers that are coming in, and we got lots of freshmen that are going to be playing a lot.
Yeah, that's the conversation I'm hearing out of Hugh Freeze. They're on campus now, and they're going to play. That they're at the point where they need to play, right?
Absolutely. I mean, they have to. I mean, that's one thing, you know, you say first, second string, but there's going to be a lot of third stringers and fourth stringers that, you know, even the projected fourth stringers, they're getting a lot of comments about, you know, from the reporters and the coaches about how they're standing out. A lot of these are freshmen, you know.
Yep.
They may not be listed on, you know, starter one or two, but you're going to see a lot of time played and a lot of depth. With a lot of depth, you can see a lot of faces in there, a lot of time getting experience for the younger guys, and it's going to give everybody a blow during this season.
Yep.
Because, you know, now all of a sudden they're not playing, you know, 20, 30 plays or 40 plays a game. They're getting a breather.
Meanwhile, Michael, let's talk some Bama. And are you over it yet? Or is everyone, like now that Nick Saban, you've had a few months to kind of get used to the thought of him not being the head coach any longer, it's time to move on?
It is time to move on, no doubt about it. But I think there may be some folks still saying, well, gosh, where's Coach Saban?
He's down the hall.
he is down the hall. As I understand it, defensive coordinator Kane Womack has his number and access to him when he needs it. So he's going to continue to be a tremendous resource for the coaching staff and the university.
Look at the recruiting that we talked about. Greg talked about how well Auburn is recruiting right off the bat. And same with DeBoer. They haven't slipped at all. They're number one and number two. It looks like they're going to be in the next few classes. They're right up there again. So the talent acquisition in Alabama is doing just fine.
And, Dan, I think it started when he came on board. You mentioned talent acquisition as the recruiting season started, but talent retention.
Yep.
He and those coaches did a great job of keeping players on campus. Some left, but they kept the majority of those players. And that's the reason preseason Alabama's ranked number 5. There's a lot of talent on the roster still, And it's just a matter of getting them to play together and play for each other.
You know, years ago, it was hard to imagine a Nick Saban offense that was anything but, you know, standard NFL kind of run the ball back in the day. But then Lane Kiffin came, really opened things up. You started seeing more spread elements and chucking the ball down the field. So I'm not much sure how much different this DeBoer offense will be, but it'll be certainly different than what we've seen in the past.
It will be, and your listeners probably remember this, but we got a glimpse of Kalen DeBoer when he was the offensive coordinator at Fresno State.
Hmm.
Played at Alabama in 2017.
Wow.
Now, he was able to put up 10 points, but that wasn't quite enough in Bryant Denny when Alabama put up 41 that day. So some fans may remember Kalen DeBoer and his offenses.
That's interesting.
Yeah, you know, it's probably one of the more difficult things to do, especially moving off of Nick Saban, transitioning to a new coaching staff. Seems like there's a whole new culture at practice and in the locker room and everything. But one thing that I think DeBoer absolutely needed, and that's a guy like Jalen Milroe at quarterback, a returning quarterback, a Heisman candidate. It's much easier to make that transition with him behind the center.
I agree with you, Dalton. He has a presence. The team and the players respect him. Fans respect him. We all remember how his season started last year, and there was a competition for quarterback, and he earned that starting role and has never let it go. Took the team to the playoffs, had a great season last year, and I think everybody's excited about what he can do this year.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see. We're talking with Michael Holland, Greg Strawn with Bryant Bank, sponsoring Football Fridays with Paul Feinbaum, which will kick off here at the end of this week, our first conversation this year with Feinbaum. Greg, let's talk a bit about this Auburn schedule. A lot of people have discussed it, but it is a strange, strange schedule. First 5 weeks at home, you started off with Alabama A&M. Then Cal comes to town after, remember how late that game was last year on the West Coast? I don't think they ended till maybe 1 a.m. our time in the morning.
Fourth quarter, I was having breakfast.
then New Mexico, and then the SEC schedule begins. You stay at home, Arkansas comes, and then Oklahoma's first SEC road game will be at Jordan-Hare Stadium. You go through August and September before Auburn sees an opposing field. They've got to take care of business those first 5 weeks.
It's kind of like last year, you know, we start off with a schedule that we had a lot of small or very winnable games early on, and you're right, we've got five games right away. You know, Arkansas is probably going to be the biggest test on week four, and Oklahoma's right behind them. So, you know, then we've got to, you know, we hit the road with Georgia, Missouri, Kentucky, and you know, Missouri is really, really strong. Kentucky has shown that they have grown the last 5 years, and they're going to be a force to be reckoned with, and then we get Vandy. Louisiana Monroe, of course, you got to be careful because last year, you know, we went into a game we should have won and we didn't win that game at home. And so then we got A&M and then Alabama at in Tuscaloosa.
Yeah.
So it's you know, I think a lot of the prognosticators had Auburn at, you know, probably winning seven games going in, possibly eight, but now with the, you know, the fall season behind us, and now we're getting ready to start school. I think some are saying, you know, as many as eight, so probably 7.5 is kind of that commanding number right now.
You know, I think that so much new is going to happen in the next few months. We see it on the schedule, but we have never experienced it before. Every week, you're going to see these matchups. Like, that's not like a top 10 matchup necessarily, Oklahoma at Auburn. But is it a great matchup? Are we like, whoa, I don't want to miss that. All these new games, even in the Big Ten, week in, week out, you know, normally it'd be weeks that were kind of some high-profile stuff, maybe a game or two.
Yeah, weeks where you plan to do things with the family, for
instance. Exactly, because you're like, whatever. You know, you might hang around for your team's game, but nothing else really, you know, lights you up. I think this year, new Big Ten, new SEC, and let's leave it at that. This is going to be insane. There's going to be weekends where you say, hey, Ohio State, they're at Oregon this weekend, or whatever. Games like that. That USC is at Michigan. That's like crazy. It's like so tempting as a college football fan. I think there's just going to be a lot more games like that.
I agree.
That's just going to like just mesmerize us.
And speaking to the SEC, you know, and then now we're talking about going to a nine-season SEC schedule probably next year. Mm-hmm. So now you got, you know, with Texas and Oklahoma coming in and these teams like Missouri and others that are really starting to elevate their position, and Auburn's coming back. And you know, we obviously know Auburn's been, you know, not the Auburn team of past in the last few years, but hopefully Hugh Freeze and company has them turn, has us turned around. So it'll be interesting to see.
Yeah, it will be. And, you know, also potentially for the first time, if things at very, very small odds, but Alabama and Auburn could potentially play in the SEC championship game against each other, something we haven't seen because divisions are basically no more.
Yeah.
Top two teams out of the 16 will end up in Atlanta. Things could possibly work out to where you have an Auburn-Alabama SEC championship, but you know it could just as easily be a Georgia-Tennessee SEC championship.
And you know what? And Georgia, obviously I went to Georgia, but they no longer have the protection of the SEC East.
Mm-hmm.
You got to face it. The SEC East was down when the West, so many teams were very good, and a variety of teams were very good. Auburn up and down, but when they were good, they were very good. Of course, Georgia would play them at LSU and other teams in the SEC West. Now, Georgia almost gets the brunt of it all. If you look at their schedule, the people are saying, hey, Georgia's really good. Well, they better be, because they have to go at Alabama, at Texas, at Ole Miss, who's considered a top 10 team. Teams that come to Athens are Tennessee, potentially top 10 team, Kentucky, potentially top 15 team. So if Georgia's good, they better be.
Yeah, and they start the year against Clemson in Atlanta.
That's right.
So that's not a cupcake,
no,
I would say. Michael, as far as Bama and the big coaching change, what has that ride been like this summer? I know initially folks were saying, oh, it's over. Saban's gone. DeBoer can't do this. It seems like there's a lot more optimism here these last few months.
Yeah, his name is Ryan Williams.
Yeah. And everyone's excited about the former Saraland star. But I think as folks learned about Coach DeBoer, as he was more accessible to the media, and we hear more and more about how practices are going. Dan, you mentioned that, the recruiting and the comfort level that he is going to continue to recruit at a high level. I think everyone is kind of getting acclimated to Coach DeBoer and how he is going to perform. He took Washington to the championship game last year. He is a he is going to be a top performing coach, and I think do great things at Alabama.
What do you think? What are your what do you think fair expectations for this season are for Alabama? It's a tough question. And you remember, you have a 12-team playoff, so they could have a middling year and still get in.
But look, you run a bank. You're tough to you have tough stuff come over your desk all the time. Go ahead.
Tough. To, I think a 10-2 season would be I think a good season. Still going to get you in the playoffs. Dan, you mentioned Georgia, Alabama's first. They're on the road the week before at Wisconsin.
Gosh,
have a week off.
That's not easy.
That's a crazy game.
Then Georgia at home week four. That is a huge game.
Yeah.
And don't look for that on CBS either.
No.
You know, that's another change.
Yep, that's right.
Kind of going to have us all clicking where's the game?
Where's the game? Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, poor old Vern Lundquist. They just left him. He's left high and dry. Yeah, that Bama schedule, you're not joking. I'm looking at it right now. So, and USF, you know, South Florida, they're not easy either. We saw that last year with the big Milroe discussion and that close, I guess you can call it a close call against USF, but at Wisconsin, Georgia, they'll play at Tennessee this year. We all know what happened last time. Bama went to Knoxville.
Right.
I remember anyway. Missouri, they're not easy. They'll be after Tennessee. And then, thankfully for the Tide, you mentioned that week off before Georgia. They also get a week off before playing at LSU. That's another team that I think folks really don't know how to gauge how LSU is going to look this year. So many great offensive players that left in the draft.
Just a terrific team, Heisman Trophy winning quarterback, a lot of rebuilding at LSU, but they will be good.
They've got a really good coach, too.
They do, and high expectations for the Bayou Bengals.
Mm-hmm. Let's talk a bit about Bryant Bank, of course, and sponsoring Football Fridays with Paul Feinbaum again this year. We thank you so much for that. Talk a little bit about your role in the community. Clearly, you know, SEC football means a lot to everyone around here for the most part, and it's no different with you at Bryant Bank, but you guys, you care for the community, you live right here, you work, you go to church, everything right here with us on in this area. Talk a bit about Bryant Bank and your role with the community and why you decided to partner with us on this Feinbaum Football Friday.
Well, Dalton, we are all about community, as you said, and our, you know, in our mission statement, it talks a lot about community, about caring for the community. And one thing we've always said when Paul Bryant Jr. started our bank back in 2004 is that he wanted the bank to be a contributor to the community. He felt like, you know, a lot of times that was being lost with the banks, bigger banks coming in and acquiring other banks, and so that was a big, big part. You know, every year we do our performance reviews for our employees. And that's a big part of our performance reviews is community service. And I get that asked about me from my boss all the time, who's a president of the bank. And so it's very, very important to us. We love partnering with you guys here locally. We partner with some of the radio stations in Baldwin County, which is my market. But this has been a really great association. And, you know, I to your credit, I get a lot of comments from people throughout the community. And as I'm just living my day, every week, about hearing us on the radio and hearing our sponsorship. And so it means a lot to us. And, you know, the big thing we always try to remind ourselves as we're out there trying to promote our bank is that, you know, our bank is named after our owner. And most of our competition can't say that. You know, we're privately owned. Michael and I talk to our owners every week, you know, and who can say that? And that means a lot to me. And I've been with the bank now almost 18 years, and I'll see it through when I go to retirement. But it's a great organization. We've got great people all the way through from top to bottom. We talk about, you know, how we care about our customers, care about our community, care about ourselves. And I'm a big believer that if you take care of your employees, that they're going to take care of your customers. And I think we do that very, very well throughout the entire state.
Yeah, and Michael, that structure that Greg just laid out there, it's so important. We have it right here. You know, so many other stations are part of big conglomerates. We're locally owned. It's very easy to get answers from somebody as long as you can get them on the phone or if they're – but being able to have that kind of communication both for above you and below you, that has to make a big difference in just getting things done.
That's right. It's a family-owned business. It's right. What you're a part of. That's what we're a part of, and it makes it, you know, we have core values. We believe that we rise by lifting others. We use our expertise to help customers as they're building a business, as they're growing that business. But we are involved in our communities. We support athletics, and we're a big believer in that because people are built, communities are built through those activities. So you'll see us sponsoring. We sponsor the High School Player of the Week.
Yeah.
We're sponsoring Feinbaum Fridays where we're talking about football. Those activities bring communities and families together, and we believe that's important and because it makes communities stronger. And as communities get stronger, our state gets stronger.
Yeah, and so often those local high school football players of the week are the guys we're talking about on Saturdays or talking with Feinbaum as we prepare for those Saturdays. And I saw you, you know, last year shaking the hands of a lot of those guys who are going to go on to do great things. So that is just fantastic.
Thank you guys for dropping in the conversation, and we just look forward to the fall. It's going to be great.
And if anyone's interested in banking with Bryant Bank, they can probably just stop by a local branch or hop online, I imagine.
That's right. We have four branches in South Alabama. We're on Airport Boulevard in Mobile, in Daphne. We're on Highway 98 at the intersection of 64, in Foley on Highway 59 across from the hospital, and in Orange Beach, we're on Canal Road.
Right. Thanks again, guys. Appreciate you guys coming, and you're welcome anytime.
Thank you very much.
Look forward to it. Thank you.
Got it. It's 8:53 FM Talk 106.5 Mobile Mornings. We'll wrap it up, and the Jeff Poole Show on the way. We'll preview that. Know some football.
They do.
I mean, Strawn had like a playbook. He was ready to break down the Hugh Freeze 3rd-and-8 options. It's Dan and Dalton, FM Talk 106.5 Mobile Mornings, and Jeff Poore is on the way.
He is on the way. Let's see if Jeff has told us. Yeah, coming up on the Jeff Poore Show, he'll have his biweekly guest, State Representative Jennifer Fidler, joining him in the first hour. How about this? Hour number two, George Wallace Jr.
Yeah.
On the Jeff Poore Show. And in hour number three, State Representative Danny Garrett. Mr. Plott on the text line. We were talking about the far-left faction of the Democrat Party and how they're going to make their voices heard this week. He said, shouldn't we downgrade the squad to the trio now? Yeah, with, was it Tlaib who lost her congressional race there? Gardner says, Muslim countries investing big money in higher education, and it results from professors teaching anti-Semitism. I guess that's kind of similar to the Confucius Institute thing with China,
yep,
and how so much Chinese money made its way into the American education system.
Including universities here in Alabama.
Including, yeah, Troy. And you start to see more pro-communist China leanings from... Well, and I think there have been some communist leanings, at least in the faculty of colleges for a long time, but even more pronounced once they have kind of their own program, basically.
Yeah.
But same thing, you're right, with a lot of these Muslim countries funneling money into colleges. But, you know, the Israelis have been doing the same thing for a long time, too. So it's just a strange, strange, wild world we live in here.
Yeah. We were all surprised by the reaction to Netanyahu and Israel after the attack. And we were all surprised. We were all taken aback by people celebrating that attack on American soil.
Yeah.
I mean, that was sick.
It was sick. And also, Pete, wow, Israel was brutally and viciously attacked and since has been fighting for its lives as wolves close in on all sides. American support has been tenuous at best, but the propaganda prevails that Israel is trying to expand the war. What color was that Kool-Aid? Yeah, but with Iran, you know, the question is when. When is the Iran-Israel thing going to be too much to manage diplomatically and it's time to go to war? Is it because Iran is closing in even closer on having nuclear capabilities? You know, you hear from different reports that it could be sooner than later. Is Israel trying to get it now, before then? Or do they see in their intelligence that Iran is prepared after these most recent attacks, killing high-level commanders for Hezbollah and Hamas and the IRGC? They say, all right, it's on. Iran knows it's on, so it's time to go. But we've been waiting for, has it been a full week now? We've been waiting for the response from Iran?
I think it was a week ago during the weekend or somewhere around there. So it's been more than a week where it's like, what's going to happen?
Yeah.
I mean, Monday we were on high alert. It's 8:59 FM Talk 106.5 Jeff Poor Show is on the way.